Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of number one first week, number 78th, weeks 2 through 5, Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad, reminding you that beanbags are just boneless furniture. We're... We're brought to you by Shirt of Source, digging up clothing from the past so you, yes, you, can look rad today with great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old-school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or you're just weird, find something for you, all caps, at shirtosaurus.com. We are also brought by Gamefly with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back. There's an envelope there. Postage has already been paid. You can get a new one. Or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. I've been thinking about this because we're getting ready for Extra Life.
Yes.
You know, we're already starting to put in, you know, you've been putting in the time trying to find the prizes, and we've got physical copies of games, the Metroid game that you can aim and shoot.
Metroid Prime Remastered.
Aim and move at the same time. I'm thinking, actually, I've never played a Metroid game. And I think what I want to do is have you pick a good one for me to start with.
Ooh.
And like a week before Extra Life, I'll play a few hours to learn the controls and so forth.
Okay.
And then be able to play some Metroid and have kind of a first time, as it were.
I have something in mind.
Cool.
All right.
Cool. But Extra Life, we've been doing it for several years now. 7, 8, 9, 10, lots of years.
Yeah. I think if we're not at a decade yet, we're coming up on it.
We're like eight or nine years. I want to say we are, because I think we started before there were kids in the picture families.
We did.
Yeah.
Because the first one was at Justin's apartment, and I played all of God of War 3 while he was at work before we even officially started the...
You did.
Anyway, I'll be playing for University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital. I know that Darren's playing for that one as well, too, because he said it yesterday and the day before. And Justin's playing for Cardinal Glennon down in St. Louis, which he said the day before yesterday. And so... this is one of those, this is one of the very few, you know, charity events that we take part of as a group, because it is near and dear to our hearts. It is also something that 100% of donations are going to the programs at these hospitals. It's not coming to us. It's not going to a CEO, you know, of the charity or whatnot. It is, the donations are going into the system. And so that's why we're a part of it. That's why we encourage you to donate to it. And I don't know that I have too much else to say about it right now, but next month I'll say more.
All right.
So with that being said, it's taken me ages to write that up, and I had to regretfully decline some invitations for social engagements. But I know that Justin, who has a much more fulfilling and active social life than I do, has probably gotten to do something.
Please welcome Billy Joel.
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
Billy Joel.
Piano Man. Oh,
welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. And why only the first episode? Because Finghouli is on in 30 minutes. This week they're showing The Thing with Two Heads. I don't want to miss it. The year, 1968. The place, California. The man, Elvis Presley. Or as the show is called, Agent Elvis. The King is preparing for his newest TV special, Elvis Christmas. It will feature Tiny Tim and the Elvis Elves. Getting into the limo to head back to the home base, we meet Elvis's monkey, Scatter. Scatter is into drugs and the ladies.
Whoa.
As they drive away, Elvis calls his wife Priscilla. The call is cut short when the driver locks the doors and tries to kill them. Elvis, having spent several months moonlighting as a vigilante, gets the car to crash and begins fighting the driver. With Scatter's help, they take him back to the home base and interrogate him. Unfortunately, Scatter blows a hole in his head before he can talk. Later,
man, that's so rock and roll.
Later, a group of females ask Elvis for a picture. They try to kill him, too. A mysterious female clad in Italian leather shows up and helps save him. Turns out Elvis has been put on a kill list by Charles Manson.
There is so much happening right now.
Manson kidnaps Elvis's friend, Bobby Ray, to draw Elvis out. After coming to the rescue, Elvis, Bobby Ray, Scatter, and the mysterious woman, who still at this point has not been given a name, are captured by Manson's groupies. He wants Elvis to become part of his family to help make him big in the music business. The King refuses and a fight breaks out. Unfortunately, the groupies are so high on LSD they can't feel pain. Basically, hippie zombies.
I've been there.
Lots of bloodshed later, Elvis and his team emerge victorious. Elvis changes the TV special from a Christmas show into what would become his 68 comeback special. The mysterious woman, who still hasn't been given a name, asks her boss if Elvis is ready to join him. Not gonna lie, this made me chuckle a few times. Matthew McConaughey voices Elvis.
All right.
Johnny Knoxville voices Bobby Ray. Tom Kenny. SpongeBob voices Scatter the Monkey. And no, Scatter doesn't talk. Scatter is a monkey.
That made sense.
Who wears a diaper.
Sure.
And a jaunty vest.
Why not?
The show was created by Elvis's ex-wife, Priscilla. And she's also one of the producers, and she voices herself. I'm not sure why this happened, but there it is. So now for my predictions. Clearly, the mysterious woman and her boss are part of a top-secret government spy organization. They recruit Elvis to help them fight both threats to America, both internal and external. He faces all manner of threats, but none as great as the Beatles. Elvis has to stop them at any cost. Going deep undercover, he adopts the identity of avant-garde artist Yoko Ono. As Ono, Elvis befriends John and causes a rift in the band, leading to their breakup. Unfortunately, Elvis has fallen in love with John and stays undercover to live the rest of his life as Ono, or her life as Ono. The government fakes Elvis's death, and the rest is history. I give it 4 chimpanzees pulling a .44 Magnum out of their diaper out of 5.
Fun fact, Paul McCartney is in this, but he's voiced by Simon Pegg. In other news, Dolly Parton has just released a rock and roll album.
She has. It's really good.
In which she does a trio with Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr.
Yes, it's a Beatles reunion.
Meaning, the Beatles finally had a reunion.
Dolly did it.
As the resident Beatle expert, I would say that it happened in the mid-90s, but whatever. You do you, Chad.
What happened then?
George, Ringo, and Paul got together. They were given demo tapes that John had recorded before his death. And they worked those demos into new Beatles songs. So all 4 Beatles are present on those songs.
Huh.
John in tape only, because it was him and a piano. And then the others came in and added other instruments and worked it together.
So you're saying that John was the problem because the other three were able to work together so long as he was gone? Well, we'll talk about that in the music segment.
You know, I mean, if...
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the music segment. We're good.
I smell a week three coming up.
Oh, Lord.
So there are a... Thank you, Justin. I appreciate the ancient Elvis. That was fun. There are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are relegated to the dustbins of history. The segment of the show asks you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It was good then. The original's just as good now. Reboot it. The idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it. What are these characters doing now after a couple decades of growth and development? Or refuse it.
All right. Didn't have the tutting on the list. All right.
I need that as an alarm.
Set in a universe where anthropomorphic cats rule the world, let me introduce you to two of the most badass felines to exist in this entire universe, Jake and T-Bone. Discharged military vets with a score to settle and a chip on their shoulder. Now vigilantes, they fight crime and protect Mega Cat City as SWAT Cats, the Radical Squadron.
Revive, revive, revive.
Yes! Yes, revive.
This action cartoon...
Please continue.
This action cartoon started with a guitar riff so heavy it required a back brace to play it. A product of Hanna-Barbera in the early 90s, the cartoon lasted a grand total of 25 episodes and one special. It was canceled, and there a lot of reasons are said for this, but it kind of happened after Ted Turner decided to open his mouth to Congress and talk about how we have the Flintstones and Smurfs as children's entertainment, and those don't encourage violence. Now, he was talking about, like, Beavis and Butthead, you know, that had repeatable,
right,
realistic kind of violence. But it was taken to mean that there should be a strict anti-violence policy, which kind of torched the show.
Well, it also is what led to, like, Spider-Man, the animated series,
yep,
just being
no punching.
So nerfed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ted.
Over their episodes, Jake and T-Bone fought against Dark Cat and his creeplings, Dr. Viper, a half-cat, half-snake creature, Mac and Molly Mange, the husband and wife criminal team a la Bonnie and Clyde, the Pastmaster, an undead sorcerer that could travel through time, and so many more that if I were to just list them, we would be here until tomorrow. Or another, like, 22 names. A tonally dark series, the main characters were actually pretty lighthearted, which kept the show from being too oppressive in tone. And when things blew up, by golly, did they blow up in this one. It was part of the Saturday morning set that featured anthropomorphic animals like the Ninja Turtles, or Street Sharks, or Biker Mice from Mars. It was one of the top ratings earners for its two seasons. The show was meant for older kids. No joke. 12 yeah, and older at least. But there is a reboot series in the works.
Yes!
Yes!
Geared towards 5 to 11.
No!
No!
There's little more to say at this point, so both of you have already voted for Revive. My spouse said the same because I didn't actually watch this when I was growing up. It was on Fox, and I didn't...
So, here's the thing. I never watched it on TV. I had two of the VHSs.
Oh, yeah?
Two of the VHS tapes that I just watched ad nauseum. Metallicats Attacked was one of them.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at the list, and I think the other one was The Cat Chronicles, which included an episode called Bride of the Pastmaster. And I watched those so often. Kids, for those of you who don't know what a VHS tape is, it is a plastic cassette with a magnetic tape inside that you need to, like, run through a VCR to watch, and eventually the tape wears out or breaks. I watched these so often, the tape broke on both of them. So yeah, please. But, like, you broke my heart. You gave me hope and you broke my heart at the same time.
I'm sorry.
What with the, like, hey, there's a reboot coming. Oh, wait, but it's probably going to be bad.
It is being put together by people who supposedly loved it.
I mean, there's a chance. shows for little kids can be great.
They can be.
Mm.
Oftentimes, though.
They're not.
They're not.
They're not.
Yeah, what was that Thundercats reboot thing they did?
Yeah.
Thundercats Ho?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was also put together by somebody who, quote, loved the original.
That's true.
Fun fact about SWAT Cats.
Okay.
Razor and T-Bone, the two main characters.
Yeah.
Razor was voiced by Barry Gordon, who was Donatello in the original Ninja Turtles series.
Mm-hmm.
T-Bone was voiced by Charlie Adler, who played Buster Bunny in Tiny Toons.
There is a SWAT Cats SNES game.
Yeah. So in like...
I'm going to have to track that
so
down.
So in like 8 years when you do, you know, the year of the SNES.
Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, it's single player.
Oh, my God.
It's single player.
Sorry,
I was going to have...
Are you learning like that Rob Paulsen and the guy who voiced Skeletor and all those guys were also doing in this?
Sort of, because it also featured the voice talents of Jim Cummings.
Yep.
Tress McNeil.
Yep.
To be fair, they're in everything.
Frank Welker, who again is everything. Mark Hamill was in it.
For one episode.
Still. Who else?
There's a lot. I mean,
there is a lot.
You just slide down. Like I said, when you go down the
Rob Paulsen,
you go through the whole list. There's no joke a lot of talent that was pulled into that. But it was that Saturday morning talent that when you go back and you look at who was active in the early 90s.
Yeah.
It's just a who's who of great voice actors
it
now.
It really is.
So.
Damn. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I'll go looking for you guys for Christmas.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's time to take a look at some trailers. We did. I watched some trailers. We'll get some real quick here. Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning 1, Part 1, also called Mission Impossible Part 7, Part 1. Okay, these films are undeniably fun. They're action packed. This one looks to be very much the same, despite the "Ooh, we're totally gonna kill Ethan this time." They're not. It's Part 1.
Yeah.
Haunted Mansion. Okay, I'm more interested in this version of Haunted Mansion than I was the Eddie Murphy film from 2003.
Oh, absolutely.
Still going to wait on it for Disney Plus, though. My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. Honestly, I didn't even know they made a second one. I loved
and
the
TV series.
I loved the first one. Didn't know they made a second one. Now they got a third one. This poor guy cannot be a vegetarian around this family. You know, in the first movie is like... So what, you know, I'll make you some food. He's like, oh, I'm vegetarian. I don't eat meat. He don't eat meat. It's okay. I'll make lamb. In this one, in the trailer, it's just like, she's like, he's looking at the chickens and the old woman says, you pick the chicken. We'll have for dinner. I don't eat meat. And she looks at him. There's beet. No. Okay. I'm looking forward to discovering this one and maybe even the second one. It's big family drama. I'm here for it. Meg 2, The Trench.
Yes.
Jason Statham is back for more Megalodon shenanigans. Bad luck, old bean. Dune Part 2. They're making a sequel? Come on, what more is there to say? Wrap it up, Herbert. Gran Turismo. That's official. Legolas has lived so long that he's now taking video gamers and turning them into race car drivers. I'm sure it'll be fine. Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. The origins of Emperor Palpatine. I mean, Coriolanus Snow. Also known as the movie I didn't ask for and don't think I need.
Yeah, I love the original series, but I'm not interested at all.
I really like the books. I don't like how shaky the cam... The movie's told a good story.
Yeah,
that was fine with that.
Shaky cam is a bit much, yeah.
And the thing is the room my TV is in is too small for the TV on purpose. But it means that when you sit in there and the whole thing is shaking, it's really easy to get sick.
Yeah.
Steadicam is our friend in my TV room.
Can confirm.
You basically have an in-house Omnimax.
That's the point. Transformers Rise of the Beasts. I like the King Kong Prime. That's cool. Never realized how jarring it would be, though, to see the Twin Towers in the New York skyline again. That was something.
Ooh.
Yeah. No, like, because it takes place in like 1994 or something like that, or 87 or whatever it takes place. Like, it shows that era's New York skyline. Watch it as a person who remembers that event, and you can't see anything else on that skyline. Crazy. Poor Things. Well, that was an experience. I expect nothing less from the director that brought me the movie The Lobster, though.
Oh, God.
Five Nights at Freddy's. I don't like scary movies anymore. Animatronic horror is somehow worse.
Yeah.
I don't want to play the games. I don't want to watch the movie. That's a nah from me, dog.
I played the first one, and I maybe about 10 minutes in, I'm like, this is not for me.
Yeah. The Creator. Oh, humans versus AI war, like The Matrix or Terminator. Except not. I'm sure that it's going to ask a whole bunch of questions, and if they ask those questions honestly and they wrestle with them authentically, it's going to make an excellent and prescient thriller for today's world and tomorrow's study. But I fear that what they're going to do is they're just going to make it a shoot, shoot, bang, bang, ah, kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a technical term. I'm pretty sure that Ebert and Roper.
That's how they said it.
Said it. Mm-hmm. So lots of trailers, lots of things coming out. And quite honestly, a lot of them look pretty good, but some of them look better than others. You know, I've been having some questions, guys. The problem is that you two of you are just so smart that you're able to come up with good, correct, right answers so often. So I want wrong answers only for our question today.
Okay.
I heard on the radio that Superman Legacy is apparently going to be a thing coming in 2025. Wrong answers only. What's it about?
It's about Superman's first car, a 1987 Buick Legacy.
Ah!
It is going to be about everything that we hate and or made fun of in every previous Superman movie. You know, the foil S, Nuclear Man.
Rampant property destruction.
Yeah. That's all it is.
It's just that legacy.
It is an homage to that.
So, my 9-year-old said Spider-Man.
I mean, in a way.
What's worse? Wrong answers only. That's awesome, right? And my spouse said it's just a 90-minute compilation from all media of Superman's legs and hindquarters.
Legs I see. Yeah.
Yep. Set to elevator music.
Man, I was going to make that joke, too. So, great minds.
But here's what it's really about. We're on Krypton because we don't get a getaway without...
We got to do the whole thing.
Yeah, we got to do
that. But it's right before, right? We're not doing Space Texas, you know? And we're not doing Action Jor-El.
Yeah, okay.
We've just got Jor-El's putting the baby in and...
There you go.
He goes, right? Opening credits floating through as the ship breaks through into the Earth's atmosphere, nighttime over the city, and there is a boom as the sound barrier is broken, startling a young hoodlum in an alley in Gotham City who, without even realizing it, pulls the trigger on his firearm.
What?
Killing a wealthy philanthropist and his wife. Realizing what he's done, he runs away, leaving only the son to grieve. That is the story of Superman Legacy.
Are you telling me that Batman is Superman's legacy?
Yep.
Okay.
You can't make a movie without him.
Apparently not. Which
I am both angered and excited for that.
Which, speaking of, this is the best place to segue into it.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of, you can't make a movie without Batman.
Right.
Let's go back to our Discord, dkpodcast.com. Click on the Discord link and join today. It's free, and you get to talk with us, and you get early access. Question from the Discord from RunMyAce85. What do you think of the state of the DC Universe film-wise? And what would you do if you were in charge? If you had James Gunn's seat, essentially. I think that it's all going to hinge on how Superman Legacy does. Really?
You think?
I think it is. Because,
I think,
like,
it's hinging on The Flash already.
Well, it is a two-part question in that, like, what's the state of it now and then moving forward? So, yeah, right now, yes, it's hinging on Flash. But, like, Superman, I think it kind of gets lost, and I recognize the irony in me saying this while wearing a Superman t-shirt. I think it gets lost a little bit in how important to the U.S.'s, at least, pop culture that Superman has been, and not as much anymore. But I think that there is still a desire for him to be important again. And yeah, if I had the reins, my top priorities would be a couple of things that James Gunn has already mentioned. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, you know, your Trinity. And then, you know, do some stuff with other characters that have not been done before or not been done right. Like Green Lantern. I think you could make a great Dr. Fate movie that could rival Dr. Strange. And I think you also do a Nightwing movie. You know? Not a... Because, like, Aquaman, people know who Aquaman is now. Martian Manhunter's still a bit niche. But you get... That way you've got a Bat Family movie. So you still got Batman, you still got that adjacency, but you're also introducing new characters, because from Nightwing you can branch out into the Titans, you can branch out into Batgirl and Tim Drake and Signal and all these other ancillary characters, and really kind of focus in on characters that are optimistic and that are pop. Because I think the problem with the Snyderverse was that it went so dark because DC learned all the wrong lessons from The Dark Knight, which is a fantastic film. But they learned all the wrong lessons, which is dark and brooding equals money. And that is not what happened.
Dark and broody equals Batman.
Exactly. So that's Ace 85. Well, that's how I would have. That's how I would do it. So what about you guys?
Well, for me.
Go ahead.
OK, so for me, I'd say the current state of it is dumpster fire in potentia.
Yeah, it's pretty much dead.
I am extremely disappointed with their choice to move forward with the Flash movie, given that its lead character, the actor, who I'm not even going to name, is shown to be a dumpster fire themselves.
Right.
If I was in James Gunn's shoes, I would have scrapped that, moved forward with Batgirl. Or at the very least said, all right, you know what? Clean slate. We are not moving forward with Black Adam. We are not moving forward with The Flash. We are not moving forward with any of these other projects. We are starting over from here. And you find a jumping off point, whether it's Golden Age superheroes, you know, Superman, Batman, or the original Justice Society, or something along those lines. You find a definitive starting off point. And from there, you can branch out. And I definitely like the idea of a Nightwing movie. Or something along those lines. A Bat Family type of thing.
Well, assuming that The Flash is going to do well, I think...
Which, unfortunately, it probably will.
It probably will. The early reviews have been very, very favorable. Even from Stephen King, of all people.
Yeah. So I look forward to them, you know, casting Kevin Spacey, you know, coming up. Probably Tim Allen.
My God.
I'm sure there's some more that, you know, they're going to snipe, you know, Jonathan Majors from. I'm sure there's just a host of people that they'll learn the wrong lessons from, and
yeah.
They'll be like, see, we need this.
Well, what
to
would
do this thing?
What would you
Mel
do?
Mel Gibson.
The question is, what would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
Scrap.
Please tell me that's not it.
Yeah.
Scrap the whole thing for 5 years. Straight up.
Straight up hard reset.
Straight up, there are no mainline DC hero movies for 5 years.
Okay.
Take from D-list only. And I don't even know what D-list looks, you know, I don't even know what that looks like in DC because...
Okay, you know, so The Question, OMAC.
Yeah, you know, Deadman.
Deadman.
Yeah.
You know, give me a Deadman. Give me a... Who's the guy that turns into a demon?
Etrigan.
Etrigan.
Adam Strange.
Give me an Etrigan movie.
Okay.
You know, one of those things where you do small, reasonable budget for effects and so forth, but casting folks who are... Do the original Star Wars thing where you have one named actor and a bunch of nobodies.
Okay.
And you find directors who are hungry, who haven't had any success, like they haven't even been given much chance for success. And you give them these small movies with a reasonable budget, you know, a couple of $1 million in today's world, you know.
Yeah.
And pay your writers well, pay your actors what they are worth, and those are the kind of movies I want to see out of DC. That's what I would do, and then build toward. You know, you can allude all the way back to that beginning part. You can allude to the guy in Metropolis, the guy, you know.
The nut in Gotham or whatever,
the
yeah.
The nut in Gotham. Or you can even go to, you know, the protector of Bloodhaven. Is it Gloomhaven?
No, Bloodhaven.
Bloodhaven.
You're right. Yeah.
Bloodhaven, yeah.
Sorry. You know, you could talk about those kind of things. You could talk about the princess or whatnot. Or there are all these kind of things that you can allude to and you can even have happening. It's kind of like when we play D&D, you know, the party is the main characters, but there's other things happening in the world.
Right.
You know, and those other things that are happening in the world are going to eventually impact the party. You know, you can have... And maybe that's what your Superman picks up with is when we're first learning about Etrigan, what was Superman doing? And now he's 5 years later. Now we're dealing with the consequences of that. You know, he puts Luther in jail. That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
You know, Luther was president. Now he's in jail.
Oh, man. A Rise of Lex Luthor film.
There you go.
You know, that to me... It requires trust, and I don't know that there's trust in the Hollywood system to really be able to do that.
Yeah.
But it would be amazing from the perspective of the audience member. I only know the big three when it comes to, you know, wider stories and so forth. And I read the whole Geoff Johns
the Green Lantern run thing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's something that could be adapted if done with a lot of patience and time.
You know, I didn't, you know, and honestly, like doing a good 2-hour Green Arrow movie that focuses on Green Arrow, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind having those kind of things. I like those smaller movies. There's always room for another great big blockbuster blowout, but no. If I were in the seat, first thing I'm doing is canceling everything that has, you know, a member of the Justice League in it for 5 years. And we're gonna spend that 5 years, we're gonna release after the first year, we'll release 2 films a year, you know, building up to, you know, a Superman or a Batman or a Wonder Woman or a Flash or an Aquaman.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's where your Martian Manhunter comes in. You know, maybe your big, you know, gathering thing is a Martian Manhunter movie.
Yeah.
That brings in all of these Batman Beyond or Justice League Beyond, you know.
Right.
Tertiary characters.
God, I would love to see a Batman Beyond movie.
mean, it'd be cool.
It'd be cool. Keaton is old man Bruce. Yeah, it works. Yeah,
it would work.
So, well, that's where I am. That's kind of...
Cool. Well, thanks to Run My Ace 85 for the question.
So, I got some reviews. Do either of you have some movie reviews or...
No.
Yeah, I know it's a little well after the fact, but I... So, Cocaine Bear, better than it... Better than it should be.
I'm pretty sure it could have been about an actual bear that they gave cocaine to, and it would have been better than it should be.
There's a little bit of gore, like quasi-realistic gore, but it's done sparingly, and I don't want to say tastefully, but it's done in such a way that I'm not grossed out the entire movie. It's not gore for gore's sake. It's done well. The CGI with the bear, I loved it, especially when the bear is getting high.
Okay.
Yeah. It is better than it has any right to be.
All right.
Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is now on Disney Plus. I still have yet to see it. I want to, but my spouse has this thing where she will just read spoilers for stuff and then decide she doesn't want to watch it. So I have not yet watched that. Nor have I seen Guardians 3, which, again, I want to. Eventually.
Only thing I know about Guardians 3 is at the end of the credits it says Star-Lord will return. Because that...
Well, I know that, like, they've on record. They've gone on record of saying that, like, Zoe Saldana is done. Dave Bautista is done.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Pratt's not doing anything else, so, you know.
I've heard it's very, very good.
I'm sure it's good.
Yeah.
Because... that whole series has been remarkably well received.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Probably another lesson that maybe it's not superhero movie fatigue. Maybe it's just mediocre movie fatigue.
Yeah.
Anyway, I watched some movies and shows. One 1982 classic, Conan the Barbarian. Because
yes, I need to see that again.
I needed to just kind of not think for a while and have some... something going on.
You needed to hear the lamentations of the women.
I did. The first Arnold Schwarzenegger one. You know, it's a serviceable sword and sandal fantasy adventure where it lacks compelling action. It makes up for in a soundtrack that has no right to go as hard as it does. All right. Arnie, James Earl Jones, Mako, some few others. Makes for a movie worth watching at least twice. A-. Farzar. Animated show for adults, okay? It's on Netflix. Farzar takes place in another galaxy, where the son of the villainous Renzo has been placed in charge of the Shat Squad. It's a show from the creators of Brickleberry and Paradise PD.
Aha, there we go.
The show's determined to show you how barren its field of bothers truly is. You know, it's thought-out comedy. It's undercut by its determination to be crude whenever possible. It's funny, but I don't know if it's good.
Mm.
So B minus on that. Live action, Rurouni Kenshin, the final. Just as good as the other live action adaptations. It should be watched by anybody that's a fan of the manga, the anime, or the other live action movies. Covers the final arc between Kenshin, Himura, and Enishi, bringing the consequences of Kenshin's time as Batosai the Manslayer to its inevitable conclusion. So this is one of those, it does not work on its own merits. You have to have the other movies. You know, it's like the fifth one.
It's a homework film.
Yes. But if you've done that homework, it's an A. If you've not done that homework, it's a B minus.
Okay.
Because it doesn't want to explain things that you already know.
That's still pretty good, though.
It's still really good sword fighting, and it's still really compelling cinematography. It's the only thing that drags it down is the story, because you've got gaps.
Fair.
Okay. This one I want you guys to watch at some point. All right. If you haven't already. Saturday Morning All-Star Hits. This is on Netflix. And it does a depressingly accurate parody / homage to the host-led Saturday morning cartoons. You know, where the cameras go in and out, and you've got the two, a little bit too old to be kids, but they're acting like kids, hosts. do not watch it with children in the room.
Okay.
Because the cartoons that they show, one of them features a depressed and alcoholic dinosaur.
Oh.
One of them is a group of animals that beat the rage out of people to harvest peace.
Oh.
It's really funny in that dark, it probably shouldn't be kind of way. And so it's a B+ because I still don't know. I mean, the one where the animals beat people up for peace, it's called Strongimals. And it's good. And it's like you watch Randy, which is the depressed and alcoholic dinosaur, and you're like, oh, man. Oh, man. This is... Whoo, they just killed that kid. Oh, man. And then they got, like, creative critters or creative critters or something. It's basically, it's like Care Bears, except they're, creative bears.
Mm.
And so one's got, like, paste for hands, and the other one's got scissors and so forth. And they are the pseudo-imaginary friends of an adult ad agent who's, like, trying to create a new ad campaign for a company. Basically, all the company really wants is for him to make a new stylized capital B. Wherein, when you look at the different ones that have been made, are all just like Arial font B. Like they say, we played with serifs and it didn't go well. It's a B+. It might be better than that, but I need somebody else to watch one of these with me to find out if it's... Because it brought me right back to like 1992, and I'm like, oh, no. No. Oh, no.
Okay.
All right. So that's it for my reviews. That's it for that. So the only thing we have left then is the... Yes, Darren.
Yeah, one more thing.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, so you guys saw the first Spider-Man film back in 2002 with Tobey Maguire.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Kirsten
yeah.
Dunst.
The good one.
Yeah. You remember that scene where... Mary Jane slips on some juice. Somehow it's extraordinarily slippery. And Peter catches her, catches the tray in his other hand, and then catches like all the food one after the other, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all done with practical effects. None of that is CGI. And it took them 156 takes to do it.
I bet they did it twice, but the first time it was ruined when, who played Mary Jane in that one?
Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst went, holy shit.
Yeah, it was actually Tobey Maguire catching all the things on the tray. All of the items had like this sticky substance applied to their underside so they would stick to the tray, but he still needed to catch them in order.
So it
took 156 takes, according to John Dykstra, head of the effects team for the film. 156 takes. They were ready to kill him after 20.
I believe it.
That's all I got.
All right, and that's all you got, Justin?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, Kent.
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
All right, so by the roll of the dice, my next movie is Deirdre and Lainey Rob a Train.
Sounds fun.
Deirdre and Lainey Rob a Train. This month, however, I watched Dynasty Warriors. Dynasty Warriors. Spell check, Chad.
The Nasty.
The Nasty Warriors.
A movie that I was less interested to watch than any movie since The Kissing Booth in episode 102.
Oh, I remember The Kissing Booth.
I don't like the video games. I struggle with understanding the chaos of hundreds of single-point mooks, and overall, it feels like a bad representation of a Western RPG power fantasy. Anyway, there are so many names flung around this movie that eventually I stopped hearing them. A buddy of mine, when we watched Thor 2 and Mjolnir goes on his, you know, cross-country...
Mjolnir's adventure, yeah.
Mjolnir, you know... And they showed the name of the planet or the thing, the realm every time. He's just like, oh, look, it's Cleveland. Because because that was all the meaning that it had. So I've got two big names for you to remember and three little names. So Doug is the bad guy.
Doug.
Doug. His name's like Dongju or something. But
okay.
I'm not going to say Dong every time. So Doug's the bad guy. He has the power of overweight, successful general. Lou is the big bad's primary warrior.
Oh,
he
Lou
has
Boo.
The power of lightning. Mm. Larry is the leader of three brothers with waterbending. Gary is the strategist brother with firebending. Herschel's the brother we're not worrying about because he doesn't do anything. Airbending, maybe? He doesn't have much. Instead, remember Charlie. Charlie's the ambitious other hero, maybe. He has force powers.
I can already tell that this is not going to be a good adaptation.
The Hunt, it's actually great.
Oh.
Like, if you speak Cantonese.
Oh.
The Han Dynasty has been cornered by the Yellow Turban Army, an army led by some kind of wizard. They wear yellow turbans, and they can turn into zombies.
Hmm.
Doug is leading the army on behalf of the Han Dynasty. He is quite literally the dynasty warrior. The three brothers show up and help put a stop to the rebellion with magical weapons in one of only two scenes that looks like the Dynasty Warriors games. You know, where you've got a couple of fighters against hundreds.
Yeah, I like those.
Yeah, that's that. this is the one of two.
Okay.
At the close of the battle, because the three brothers have no titles of their own, Doug ignores them and rides off. Kind of a dick.
Mm.
When he returns to the capital, Doug that is, he deposes the current emperor and puts a different kid on the throne. And yes, child.
Yeah.
Good 12 years old.
I mean, it made sense when you consider history.
It seems to make absolutely no difference to the plot other than to illustrate that this guy's a bad dude and somehow lend... It's basically fridging the free, you know, the kid. It gives motivation to our heroes to want to do something. In another corner of the kingdom, Charlie is eating dinner with a bunch of mucky mucks who are all bemoaning and whining about the overthrow of the emperor. Charlie starts laughing and saying he'll assassinate Doug by himself. Okay. So now we're going to cut back to the three brothers. The movie does this. It just bounces all over the place. The three brothers are traveling to a meeting of warlords that are planning to overthrow Doug. They end up in a forest before collectively going on a drug trip and meeting the Lady of the Forest, or the ruler of the Castle of Swords. Honestly, guys, I didn't care enough to write it down, and there's no plot synopsis of this on Wikipedia for me to refer to, so... But they get there, and she starts telling them the story of Charlie and Lou. And so now we're going to... We're going to leave the lady and the three brothers, who are apparently our main characters, so that we can go and learn more about Charlie and Lou. All right. Charlie attempts to kill Doug. He's, you know, making some friends there.
Yeah.
And Doug decides he's going to reward this Charlie dude for his loyalty, you know, clearly, you know. And so Lou... You know, Lou's sent out to pick a good horse. Pick a good horse, Charlie. Or Lou. This is when we learn that Lou has also been to see the Lady of the Sword Castle drug trip thing.
Mm.
And received a magical weapon. So the thing about these magical weapons, they are made out of bloodthirsty stone. So the more blood they drink, the more powerful they become. So with Lou out picking a good horse, Charlie goes to assassinate Doug while Doug's sleeping, but Doug wakes up, so Charlie just hands him the knife, just like, nah, I'm kidding, bro, it's all good. Charlie then has to bolt because Lou knows what's up. Charlie gets shot with a bunch of arrows, his horse is killed, he barely gets away alive, when a landslide covers his survival. He's brought to a village, they get him back to health, but because he's a wanted man, the village turns him in for the reward. Charlie ends up like in court where he's supposed to be executed, but because he has a really high charisma score, he gets let go, and then Charlie gets to find the lady in the forest, which is apparently a new form of government, and he gets a blood drinking sword too. Now we're all caught up and we're back to the three brothers who are hearing this story. They wake up and they get their own blood drinking swords.
Just because some watery bent lobbed a scimitar at me.
Yep. They proceed to the side of the 18 warlords who are amassing armies to kill Doug, take back the nation, yada, yada, yada. A bunch of one-on-one fights happen, which just screamed Dynasty Warriors to me. And eventually, Gary kills the opposing general. The rest of the army runs off. Larry and Charlie plan an attack, with Larry killing Lou and Charlie killing Doug. Great big CGI-rich battle sequence that now looks like Dynasty Warriors for real, you know, with a whole hundreds of things, but with, like, really cheap graphics.
Of course.
And lots of stuttering, like, you're playing Dynasty Warriors for the PS4, but you're not playing it on the Pro.
Mm.
You're playing it on the regular, and you're emphasizing graphics.
Okay.
And you don't have a whole lot of space.
So you got
on
like
your
a
hard
low
drive.
Frame rate. Thing
oh,
going.
We're
okay.
Doing low frame rate stuff here. And then the movie ends.
Good.
Lou gets away. Doug moves the capital. He gets away. Larry and Charlie meet on a lake a few years later and have tea in a scene that promises a sequel that, if there is justice in the world, will never get made. This film is the anti-Breakfast Club. If the Breakfast Club is all character development and no plot, then this one is all plot and no character development. You gotta have a balance, you know, because if you don't know anything about the characters, you don't care what they're in for. You know more about the bodyguards in a John Wick movie than you do about the main characters in this one.
Oh.
Everything is bland, except for the drone shots, which are excellent. Somebody was really proud of the Chinese countryside, and if those are CGI, then that's where all the money went to, because they're amazing. I don't like it. I don't think you guys will like it. So I say, don't be like me. With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly, check out news and reviews, not on the podcast here, on the website, geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversations and to ask us questions and to be part of the community. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, so forth. And don't forget to check out our other offerings. You want me to watch what in week 3? Head over to YouTube, see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. For Kent Harris, our Neo, for Darren Wright, our Morpheus, for Justin White, our Trinity, I'm Chad Savage, and I'm Tank, the other guy that survived the first movie. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone's a geek for something.